Hey everyone, I'm Thanos Davelis, and welcome back to our podcast, The Greek Current, for your daily roundup, where we highlight the top stories of the day every afternoon with analysis from guest experts, policymakers, journalists, and HALC staff. Today, expert Nicholas Danforth joins The Greek Current to discuss his piece in Foreign Policy magazine that argues letting Turkey go may be the best way to repair U.S.-Turkish ties in the long run. In the piece, It's Time to Let Turkey Go, he also makes the case that the U.S. cannot single-handedly rescue the U.S.-Turkish alliance, nor will Erdogan ever offer any real or lasting reset, no matter how many times he appears to do so. Nicholas Danforth is a resident senior research fellow at the Hellenic Foundation for European and Foreign Policy, ELIEMEP, and the author of the forthcoming book, The Remaking of Republican Turkey. Nicholas, welcome to The Greek Current. It's great to have you on.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
So the piece you published last week, as we mentioned, is titled It's Time to Let Turkey Go. And this is where I want to start. What does letting Turkey go look like?
So I should start by saying it wasn't my title, but I actually do think it's a good one. The essence of it is that, look, Turkey has decided to leave the U.S.-Turkish alliance. Turkey has decided on a new foreign policy, and I don't have a great suggestion for Washington as to how to deal with that, but I think that figuring out a way to deal with that starts with accepting it, with recognizing that the alliance is over. U.S. and Turkey have been allies for over 70 years now. There's a sort of built-in conservatism to the D.C. foreign policy establishment. It's understandably difficult for people to recognize that such an important alliance has truly ended. But without understanding why that's happening, I don't think we can come up with a good approach for dealing with it.
So why has Turkey diverged so much from the U.S. and its Western allies in recent years? Is this simply a question of one man's leadership, Erdogan?
And I think that's part of the problem, right? Because Erdogan is such a prominent personality, there's been a tendency to focus on him, his rhetoric, his decisions, his ideology. And the point I'm trying to make is that this divergence goes beyond him. People have certainly offered explanations for Turkey's new, more combative, anti-Western foreign policy that rely on Erdogan's ideology, rely on Erdogan's domestic political needs. These are very important. These are very much part of it. There are also people who focus on Turkey's grievances with the United States, America's support for Kurdish fighters in Syria, America's failure to return the cleric Fethullah Gulen, who was involved in the July 16th coup attempt. And again, these are important, whether you see them as reasons, whether you see them as justifications for Turkey's foreign policy. But what I'm trying to emphasize is that all these, Erdogan's ideology, Turkey's domestic politics, these grievances, fair or unfair, have come together to really forge a new security doctrine in Turkey, a new approach to foreign policy, which a lot of Turkish politicians and commentators are very eager to talk about. And this is an approach that identifies the United States as a threat, that sees the United States and Western Europe as trying to constrain Turkey's rise, working with regional partners like Greece, like Egypt, like Saudi Arabia, to hem Turkey in its region. And in response to this perceived hostility, the Turkish government has come to the conclusion that aggressive pushback, things like what Turkey's doing in Libya, in the Eastern Med, in Nagorno-Karabakh, are necessary to actually reset the relationship. And that by pursuing a more independent foreign policy, by taking these aggressive measures, by working with Russia, Turkey can rewrite the rules of the game, in essence, in a changing global order, in a world where Turkey believes the West is in decline, and it can carve out a more prominent place for itself and protect it from what it sees as this kind of Western aggression.
In your piece, you pointed out that some people argue that cooperation can only be possible once Erdogan is gone. Given what you've explained just now on Turkey's new security doctrine, do you think that's the case, or do Turks across party lines now share this vision when it comes to Turkey's place in the world and its foreign policy goals?
And that's been one of the most difficult things to assess. You know, there are parts of what's going on now that are unique to Erdogan. I think if the opposition came to power, you might see, you know, they try to improve ties with countries like Egypt. They might try to improve ties with countries like Israel. And their rhetoric would certainly be less aggressive. But right, again, what I'm saying is there are aspects of this that cut across party lines. Some of the policy positions Erdogan's taken that have actually proven most popular amongst the opposition are things like, you know, the battle over the Eastern Med, the fight against Kurdish forces in Syria, things that are actually the most provocative, the most frustrating from the point of view of Europeans or Americans. That's what I'm saying is, yes, I mean, I think if there's someone besides Erdogan was in power, a lot of problems might get easier. There'd still be a lot of problems. And so part of the recommendation I make in the piece is that, look, the United States and Europe shouldn't be supporting democracy in Turkey because we think it's necessarily going to be good for our national interests. It's not clear it will be or it won't be. We should be supporting democracy in Turkey because we believe in democracy.
Nicholas, I want to jump now to the Biden administration. How to deal with Turkey is one of the key issues that this incoming administration will face as it works to strengthen its key alliances like NATO, and restore U.S. diplomacy in places like the Eastern Mediterranean. And we know that a President Biden will want to put an extra emphasis on, you know, America's place in the world and on reengaging diplomatically. What key challenges will Biden face when it comes to Turkey? And is there even a relationship to rescue at this point?
Well, and that's one of the things. Again, I don't have a great set of solutions for the Biden administration, but they should go into this clear-eyed about the fact they're not going to be able to save the alliance. I think you've had a debate in U.S. policy circles about, you know, whether carrots or sticks are most effective for dealing with Turkey. I think that's a fair debate, but I think we should recognize that neither approach is going to yield the kind of results we want. You know, they said Turkey's thinking is that it faces this kind of sustained Western hostility that it has to push back against with aggressive measures. I think the problem now is that if the United States gets tough with Turkey, it will only reconfirm their belief in Western hostility, but by the same token, greater efforts to engage, more carrots, are only going to confirm Ankara's belief that its aggressive pushback is working, guaranteeing us more of the same. So, you know, I think there is gradually a shift already going on, and it will continue under Biden, from an attempt to cooperate with Turkey to something that gets much closer to containment. I mean, you're seeing that already with the CAATSA sanctions that were just implemented. You know, I think those efforts are going to continue. I think that transition is going to continue. I think it should be done in a measured, thoughtful way. It should be done in coordination with America's European allies. It should be done in a way that does try to preserve the option of rebuilding the U.S.-Turkish relationship in the long run and not letting it descend completely into hostility. But I also don't think people should have any illusions that giving an olive branch to Ankara is going to save things either.
There's one camp in Turkey that has made the argument that the West should not impose sanctions because, quote, Turkey is bigger than Erdogan, and it would mean losing 50% of the people in Turkey that essentially hate Erdogan. Instead, they say the U.S. should offer Turkey, you know, these carrots, improved trade opportunities instead of sanctions. And outspoken members of the opposition, you point out, insist that this is only going to embolden Erdogan in the future. How do we thread the needle here?
I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the things I think anyone who's spoken with, like people in Turkey, like every country, there's a wide range of opinions. Even amongst people who hate Erdogan, there's a wide range of opinions. Some of them think the best way for the West to counter Erdogan is to support, you know, Erdogan's legitimate positions on foreign policy issues. Some people, as you said, think that only encourages him. There's no way to thread the needle, I guess, particularly given the backlash that Biden faced when he actually said he was going to support the opposition over the summer. You know, I think Biden shouldn't be saying he's going to support the opposition. He should simply say, you know, that he's supporting democracy in Turkey. And if the Turkish government arrests opposition leaders, he should criticize that on democratic grounds. Before meeting with Erdogan, if he does meet with Erdogan, he should push for the release of political prisoners. He should make it clear that releasing people like the philanthropist Osman Kavala is a prerequisite if they're ever going to be improved U.S.-Turkish relations. So again, I think the best way you thread this, you don't explicitly say you're helping the opposition, but we also shouldn't refrain from responding to Turkey's provocative foreign policy moves in the hopes that this will somehow appease or win over the people who don't like Erdogan.
You brought up that the U.S. will be looking to cooperate with its European partners as well. What can you tell us about the EU's positions now when it comes to Turkey? Are they facing the same question? Because we've seen them talk about measures against Turkey for some time, and they've opted to defer any real decisions after each leader summit that we followed, and the most recent one was this month. Given the geographic proximity, the number of challenges facing EU-Turkish relations, do you think the European Union should or will try to take a similar approach?
I think the EU is going through the same slow transition from cooperation towards containment or pressure, just at a much slower, more timid pace than Washington. And as you mentioned, right, the fact that after multiple discussions of sanctions in response to Turkey's activities in the Eastern Med, you've only seen the most minimal of steps. The EU is in an even more difficult position than the United States is because, as European governments realize, the kind of sanctions that would really bite, the kind of sanctions that would really cause an impact in Turkey could very easily push the Turkish economy off a cliff, which the Europeans themselves have a much greater financial stake in. European policy is going to keep going in that direction, but I think both the EU and the U.S. are going to face the same limitations, which is that the kind of the sanctions or economic measures that would really force Erdogan to rethink his policy might also put stability or Western economic interests at risk.
Nicholas, I want to wrap up with one last question here. Given everything we've discussed, what is an ideal situation for the United States?
The ideal situation for the U.S. vis-a-vis Turkey is that we go back in time 20 years, everything works out great, Turkey becomes democratic, joins the EU, and remains our partner in bringing stability and democracy to the wider Eurasian region. Now that that seems to be off the table, I think the best option for the U.S. and Turkey is that we somehow muddle through for the next 20 years, that we, let's say 10 years to be optimistic, that we avoid a situation where Turkey gets into a shooting war with the United States or one of our allies, and that we lay the groundwork or maintain the possibility that down the line, when Turkey's democracy recovers, when Turkey once again lives up to its democratic potential, that we can rebuild the alliance that ideally we would have had earlier.
Nicholas, thank you for joining us on The Greek Current. It was great having you on.
Thanks so much for having me.
In other news, the European Commission has approved use of the COVID-19 vaccine developed by Pfizer just hours after the EU's drug agency gave its authorization. The news comes amid concerns of a more infectious COVID-19 variant spreading from the UK that has prompted most EU countries to impose bans on travel from Britain. Flights and trains were banned by some 40 countries, and freight deliveries were halted at French ports. UK officials warn the new variant of the virus could be as high as 70% more contagious than the various strains already circulating. However, there's no evidence so far suggesting the new variant is more deadly. Finally, Greece is expected to receive the first 9,000 vaccines on December 26th, and another 429,000 vaccines will be received by the end of January 2021. The vaccines will be stored in 5 safe locations, while strict safety and security protocols will be kept during their distribution. A large-scale operation involving the police, Coast Guard, and the armed forces has already been prepared for the storage and transport of vaccines when the first delivery arrives and the first inoculations begin. Inoculations are scheduled to begin on December 27th at 5 hospitals in Athens and Thessaloniki, and doctors and nurses will be the first to be vaccinated. The platform on which the general population will be able to book their vaccination appointments will open in mid-January. That wraps up today's Daily Roundup. Thanks for tuning in.